Tonight we're going to continue our series that we got from 2 Peter chapter 1. This is actually the last of those lessons as we've been looking at the different characteristics that are listed for us here in 2 Peter, starting in chapter 1, verse 3. We'll go ahead and read that to review where we are in this lesson. His divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us to His own glory and excellence, by which He has granted to us His precious and very great promises, so that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world because of sinful desire. For this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue knowledge, with knowledge with self-control, and self-control with steadfastness, and steadfastness with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love. For if these qualities are yours and are increasing, they keep you from being ineffective or unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. For whoever lacks these qualities is so nearsighted that he is blind, having forgotten that he was cleansed from his former sins. Therefore, brothers, be all the more diligent to confirm your calling and election, for if you practice these qualities, you will never fall. So where we are in this series of lessons is looking at the qualities of love. And certainly there's a lot that's said about love today. Most people think about love as something that's outward act. And it's really not an outward act specifically. It is more of a prompting principle, and it's love that prompts certain acts. And certainly one of the greatest acts that we can read about in the Scriptures is found in John chapter 3, verse 16, probably one of the most famous passages that a lot of people know, that God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. And the key thing that we see in that scripture is the love of God. And it was the love of God that prompted God to do what He did. The love of God prompted Him to give Jesus Christ for the remission of our sins. In Romans chapter 5 and verse 8, we're told that God demonstrates His love toward us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And in 1 John chapter 4, verse 9, the love of God was manifested toward us, that God has sent His only begotten Son into the world that we might live through Him. So, you know, from time to time, you can see that there are acts that people can do. People can do charitable acts for different reasons. They may do it for recognition. They may do it so that people think highly of them. And charitable acts might exist without love. But love cannot really exist without charitable acts. Love cannot exist without, you know, seeing outward things. And that's what we see here in 2 Peter. And that's why love is at the end of the list. It's really the most important. All those other things that Peter talked about are all based upon love. If the love is there, all those other things are going to follow in place. And certainly, 1 Corinthians chapter 13 is the most famous chapter that we see on love, and it helps us define what it is. So we want to go through that this evening. First of all, let's notice the first three verses that we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. First Corinthians chapter 13, verses 1 through 3. If I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong or clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith as to be able to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all that I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I am nothing. So here are the things that we're told are really nothing without love. Notice what these are. Without love, one may speak all things, speak all tongues, and it would be like a gong or a clanging brass in some translations, and it's nothing. You have the gift of prophecy. And certainly in these days, and we'll say more about this when we get to this section in the Corinthian letters talking about spiritual gifts. But the spiritual gifts were things that people were very proud of, and sometimes they needed to be told on how to use those things. They were very prevalent and very useful, but Paul says if you do those things and don't have love, it's nothing. Understand all mysteries and knowledge without love is nothing. Have all faith. It's nothing without love. You can make sacrifices, even give your own body to be burned without love. It is nothing. Bestow all my goods to feed the poor. You know, it seems that it's impossible for those kind of things to be done without love, but it's really not. There are things that Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6 that can be done. In Matthew chapter 6, he says that people can do the right things for the wrong reason. He says in Matthew 6, verses 1 and 2, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. For then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogue and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward." One of the things that you see a lot of today is people, you know, tooting their own horn. Jarrell and I had a conversation about this recently, and some of you may have seen a post I put on Facebook. There's a difference in tooting your horn and laying on it. And sometimes people do this very thing that Jesus is saying not to do, sounding a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do, letting everybody know what you did that was so good. And it's almost become humorous to see how people will try to take something that's full of bragging and try to make it spiritual. But they'll post something, "Well, I'm so humbled to receive this award that they gave me for doing this, this, and this, this." You know, well, if you're humbled, you shouldn't have posted it. You know, you should have let somebody else say it. So people will say, "Well, I'm humbled by this attention," and talk about it. And you know, this just in the past couple of weeks, there was someone in the news who had received a great deal of attention because of something that they had done. And their wife was posting the articles and links to the stories and cited that she hoped that maybe they would get a reality TV show out of it and things like that. And then somebody, you know, called her out and said, "Maybe you should not be posting about this so much and let other people praise your husband." And she got very offended by that, because what he did was so wonderful, I just can't help but talk about it. But, you know, there was a line somewhere that in my view was crossed, where she, especially when she said, "I want to get a TV show out of this." Well, maybe you do not have love. You're looking at this in the wrong way and seeing what you can get out of it. And that's exactly what Jesus is saying. You know, it's good to do things for others. And it's good to, when he says you give to the needy, don't sound the trumpet before you. "Hey, look what I just did. I donated to the needy. I want to make sure everybody saw me do that." Now, that's not the way that love works. And Jesus tells us that. And that's some of what we see here in 1 Corinthians as well. The promises that Jesus gives us, or that God gives us, are based on love. In 1 John chapter 4, verse 16, "And we have known and believed the love that God has for us. God is love, and he who abides in love abides in God, and God in him." So if we abide in God, we have love. And also, we have to be cognizant that love is a prerequisite for us really being part of the kingdom. In James chapter 2, verse 5, "My beloved brethren, has God not chosen the poor of this world to be rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which he promised to those who love him?" And we'll receive a crown of life, and that's based also on those who love him. James chapter 1, verse 12, "He will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him." And so these are promises that are based on love. And so what happens if we don't have it? Well, we don't get the promise. So what are some characteristics that we see of love in 1 Corinthians chapter 13? We see that love suffers long. Verse 4 of 1 Corinthians 13, "Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast, and is not arrogant." Patience is something that many of us don't have enough of. But patience can serve as a protection for us against those who do wrong toward us. People say that patience is like clothing that you put on. The clothing protects your body, and patience protects you as well. And when wrongs toward you increase, you should grow in patience. This person that I was just talking about, maybe I should be more patient with her, but she focused on what the one person said about her that was negative, and she wrote page after page after page on her blog about all the wonderful things that her husband had done, and all the accolades that he had gotten from Southern Living and this magazine and this news station. It was even on Fox News, and talked about all those things. Yet she said, somebody said I was bragging too much, and I haven't been able to get that out of my head. I have not been able to stop focusing on that. So she was focusing all this positive attention that was coming her way. She was focusing on that one thing, and said she couldn't get it out of her head. And she said, my husband told me that I need to relax and not focus on that. And I wanted to say, he's right. Maybe you need to take that advice. But Jarrell wouldn't let me post anything. So here's one that is not really embodying patience. And it made, certainly makes me wonder, well, what is it like to live with her if she is focusing so much on one little unkind word that somebody said when the rest of the world seems to be singing her praises right now. But patience is something that many people don't have. And it's very difficult sometimes to apply. When we are persecuted, we should suffer without complaining. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 19 through 21 says, for this is a gracious thing, when mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly. For what credit is it when you sin and you are beaten for it, when you do good and suffer for it, you endure. That is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving an example that you might follow in his steps. Certainly Christ is the perfect example of patience for us, who suffered wrong unjustly. Love is patient. Love is kind. Kindness is something that we need to apply. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32, be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as God in Christ forgave you. You know, one thing that's becoming very popular today in the business world is having a live receptionist, or having some kind of system that lets you talk to an actual human. I know that we all love the electronic prompts when we call companies and don't get to talk to a live person, but you hear about Ruby Receptionist, maybe you've heard that advertised, and Konica Minolta is doing some things along those lines too, where people want to get away from the electronic voice. Why is that? Well, I heard a story one time about a woman who always went to the post office because the people in that post office were friendly. And as time went on, they had the electronic machines that you could get your stamps from the electronic machines. You just put your money in. But she would stand in line. And somebody asked her, why do you stand in line for stamps? Because you don't have to do that. You can get it right out of the machine. She said, well, the machine won't ask me how my arthritis is. She wanted to talk to the people that knew who she was and cared about her and ask her how she was doing, how her arthritis was, how her grandchildren were doing. She wanted that kindness and that personal touch. And, that might be an extreme example. Maybe I wouldn't care if they asked me about my arthritis. I just want to get my stamps and get out of it. But she wanted to have that personal touch. And it's very important for us as Christians to know that kindness is actually love at work. That's what kindness is. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 12, for when you sin thus against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. We're going to say more of that, about that when we get to that section of 1 Corinthians, but there's principles involved there of knowing what will upset or what would cause your brother or sister to sin and what would cause them to offend their conscience, and that you're supposed to care about that. You're supposed to not do things that would cause them to offend their conscience and wound them. And so that's part of kindness and caring about one another. Another characteristic of Christian love is not envying, or it may be labeled liberality in some translations. And the Greek word here is zelos, which means jealousy. And it's not the same word that was used about Jesus when it says that they delivered him up because of envy. That's used in an evil sense. So there's some differences, some subtle differences in these words. And love, not envying, it's a desire to deprive someone of what they have. And, you know, Ben Franklin, you know, said a lot of great things, evidently, because there are all kinds of quotes, and I hope they're all accurate. But the one that I came across that says, "It is the eyes of other people that ruin us. If I myself were alone and blind, I would want neither a fine house or fine furniture." I thought that's interesting, because he said, evidently, I'm not blind, and when I'm not blind and I can see what I can see, and I'm concerned about what others think, that's when I want all these things. But, you know, being concerned about what others think and also seeing things myself, you know, makes me envious. Love should not be made unhappy by the good fortunes of others. Are we ever unhappy because somebody else had something good happen to them? I can remember one time that I was unhappy with the good fortune of something, just once. When I was working at Disney World, there was a guy who, for some reason, he just didn't make friends really easily. He just kind of was one of these annoying people. And we were listening to the radio in our break room, and he called in and won some kind of contest. He guessed a song, and he won $10,000. And he was nobody's favorite person, and he certainly wasn't after we all heard that. Why couldn't we rejoice? And we were envious of that. Love doesn't behave that way. Love is not made unhappy because somebody else has a new house, a new car, or went on vacation somewhere that you didn't go. Love rejoices at the happiness of others, as we learned in our last lesson. Romans chapter 12, verse 15 tells us to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. I'm afraid sometimes we're a lot better at weeping with others than we are with rejoicing. But we need to learn to do both. Also, love is humble. Love is humble. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. It doesn't make a display of itself, as Jesus said that the Pharisees often did. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6 that the Pharisees did a lot of things just to be seen by others. And what did he say about that? Well, they have their reward. They've got what they wanted. But it was not the reward they really needed. And, you know, pride and arrogance will really ruin a person. This is often pointed out in the Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 12, "Before destruction, a man's heart is haughty, but humility comes before honor." Proverbs 29:23, "One's pride will bring him low, but he who is lowly in spirit will obtain honor." 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 8, talking about the qualifications of elders, "He must not be a recent convert. He may become puffed up with conceit or fall into the condemnation of the devil." Proverbs 16:18, "Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall." In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, Peter says, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so at the proper time he may exalt you." So there's a lot that's pointed out about humility. One thing that's very striking is when you go through the epistles of Paul. Remember where Paul came from. Paul was persecuting Christians. There were those that that didn't really care for him. They wanted to learn how to trust him. And they Christians eventually did trust him after a while. Of course, there were those that he used to be with that were persecuting the Jews that continued to try to hunt him down. But what Paul said, I want you to think about the timeline on this. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, which is about AD 59, he says, I'm the least of the apostles. Well, there's something to be said about that. But you figure all the apostles are, you kind of put them on a pedestal. And so, you know, it's kind of like, well, I'm the third first trumpet, you know. Well, you're still a first trumpet. And you're the least of the apostles. Well, that does show some humility, but he's still among the apostles. But then you go a few years later to AD 63, more or less, to Ephesians chapter 3. And then he says, I'm the least of all the saints. AD 64 in 1 Timothy chapter 1, he says, I'm the foremost of sinners. You notice what happened here? As the years go past, he keeps lowering himself. He's the least of the apostles, then he's the least of the saints, and then he's the foremost of sinners. I think that's pretty interesting because as the years go on, Paul becomes more and more humble. And he has more praise and adoration for God because he's more appreciative of what God has done for him. Maybe that's the way that we should be too. As time marches on, we should become more and more humble. That's not usually what happens. In Matthew chapter 18, verses 1 through 4, it says, at that time the disciples came to Jesus and who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And calling to him a child, he put them in the midst of them and said, truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And so there are a couple of things that strike you about that passage. Number one is that the disciples asked that question. And so, you know, they truly didn't get it. And the patience that Jesus has in trying to teach them, I want you to be like this child. I want you to humble yourself. So he does that in a way that can help teach them. But that was not the right question that they needed to ask. And of course, we see over time more and more of them becoming humbled. I think you can see that in the epistles of Peter, that Peter became humbled by the things that he experienced and that the sins that he said that he would never do that he ended up committing. He was able to help others because of the blessings and the mercy that he had received. Also, love has courtesy. Does not behave rudely. Verse 5 of chapter 13, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil. Courtesy is said to be an action of love in the little things of life. It's not brutal or boisterous. Our behavior should be this way. An example of this is found in Titus chapter 2 in verse 3. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior. Not slanderers, nor slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good. Their behavior should be holy. It doesn't behave rudely. And they're not going to be able to be the kind of teachers and examples that they should be if they are behaving rudely. We've also kind of hinted at this in other ways, but love is not selfish. Love does not seek its own. Man can be very selfish. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 24, let no one seek his own good, but the good of his neighbor. I'll tell on myself again. And maybe I've told some of you this before, but when my mom cooked pork chops, you know, they came in a package that they were not going to divide up evenly in the family. And there's no way to cut them up and put them back together to make them divide up evenly. So what does Randy do when he knows that there's five or six of us at the table and there's 9 pork chops. Well, somebody ain't getting 2. And it ain't going to be me. And so I would race through one just so I would make sure that I was going to get another one. Is that being unselfish? Well, no. And I know most parents have been in that situation where kids are trying to divide something and the mom says, okay, I'm going to let Randy cut it, and then Byron gets to pick the first slice if we're dividing something. And so I'd get out, you know, my ruler and make sure that it was exactly cut in half, because I'm surely not going to let him have a bigger piece of cake than I got. Now, I'm just making that up. I didn't really have a ruler handy. But my mom always laughed about how exact I would be if that was going to be the situation. Why? Because I'm looking out for Byron, and I want Byron to have the best. No, I wasn't looking out for Byron. I was looking out for myself. Selfishness or unselfishness is defined as not seeking your own. Philippians chapter 2, verse 4, let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. We're very good at the first part about looking out for our own interest, but not so much looking out for the interest of others. 1 Corinthians 10:33, Paul said, just as I please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, they may be saved. I believe you can certainly see that in the life of Paul. And Paul said that he'd just rather go ahead and go home with God. But the reason that he wanted to stay is to help the brethren. And so that's really the ultimate love that he could have. He's not doing what he does for himself, but he's doing it for others. Another characteristic of Christian love is that we're not provoked. The failure to control our temper is really an evil thing in our lives, or can be. It can really leave a stain on what could otherwise be a good character. And we have to be slow to anger. It's a characteristic of those that serve in leadership positions. Titus chapter 1, verse 7, for an overseer is God's steward, must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain. James 1:19, know this, my beloved brothers. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. Proverbs 16:32, who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes the city. We've looked several times in the past doing lessons on anger and temperament, and it's something that continues to be a problem in the world that we have to keep addressing, because many times we are provoked by the slightest thing and end up saying things and doing things that leave scars in our life and scars in the lives of others. Also, those that have Christian love have a sense of justice, and that they think no evil. What we mean here is that love gives the benefit of the doubt. In Proverbs chapter 10, verse 12, hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. Proverbs 17, verse 9, he who covers a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates friends. Sometimes people assume the worst. I'll just give you a quick example. In the business world this past week, there was a situation where this guy at the office that we call Chicken Little, he told me of a situation at a customer of his, and what was being done by one of our vendors wasn't right, according to what he was telling me. And so I started to write an email to the vendor about, well, you know, the customer paid for this, and this is what they're getting. They're not getting what they paid for, and we need to resolve it. And then I decided maybe I don't need to listen to Chicken Little, and maybe I need to go see the customer myself. And so I went out there, and the situation was not nearly as dire
and the vendor was actually doing a pretty good job, and there were some things that needed to be addressed. But if I had done what I was going to do, I was just assuming the worst about the situation, and I was going to react assuming the worst. And it wouldn't have been the right reaction, and I would have ended up having to apologize. I don't like doing that. So it was good that I stopped and thought about what it was that was doing. Does that ever happen to us spiritually among brethren, that we hear something and we assume the worst? Well, certainly it does. And sometimes we need to stop. Again, we need to think no evil. That doesn't mean that we avoid taking care of issues. It does not mean that we allow sin to go on and that love is not going to say anything about that. That's not what love means. Love does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Love does not rejoice in the misfortunes of the enemy, nor any wrong of any kind. And so we need to be aware of that. The summary that we see in verses 7 through 8 is that love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things, and never fails. What does that mean? Bears all things. It's not overcome by any of these negative things. Believes all things. It's not distrustful and suspicious. Hopes all things. It's looking for improvement. Enduring, it's persevering in patience. It's persevering in persecution and whatever suffering there is. And when it says that it never fails, that's a good thing because it's eternal in nature. It has a great benefit for us, not only now, but in the future. And so what Paul is saying in 1 Corinthians 13 is that love is going to crown us victors if we allow it to take hold in our life, and if we embody these things. Because in verse 13, it says, "So now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, but the greatest of these is love." Why is that? Because faith is going to be turned into reality, right? We have faith of things that are not seen, but one day that'll turn into reality. Same thing with hope. Hope is going to be realized at some point. At that point, it won't be hope anymore because it'll be there. But love never fails. Love endures forever. The love of God is why we're here. And the love of God is why we will be together in eternity. And the love of God is what will bind us together in eternity as well. It never fails. And so, the greatest of these is love, and for a good reason. I know you've probably heard many, many lessons on 1 Corinthians chapter 13. But it's something that needs to be repeated. Because we can always do a better job of embodying love in these different facets of our life, so that we can have the same love for one another that God has for us. And that's a tall order. If we can help you in any way tonight to respond to the gospel of Christ, if we can help you, we'd invite you to come while we stand and sing.